Good evening, everyone. This week's Parshas, Parshas Boy, Tav Shin Pei. Vayma Hashem El Moshe, Hashem said to Moshe, Boy Al Paroi, come to Paro, Kenech Barati as Liboy Veslev Avadav, for I have hardened his heart and the heart of his servants. Laman Shisi Oise Sai Ela Bekirboy, so that I shall place my signs within his midst. Laman Tesaper Bazne Vincha Vemincha, that you shall tell into the ears of your son, and your son's son, Eis Asher Hisalalti b'Mitzrayim, that which I made a mockery of Egypt, this Eis Asher Shasam Tivam, and of my signs that I placed in their midst, V'atem Keni Hashem, you shall know that I am Hashem. So, what is the meaning of mockery? Eis Asher Hisalalti. You're going to tell your children, your grandchildren, how I made a mockery of Egypt. Now, what exactly is this mockery? What is the mockery going on? Is the mockery going on the past? Is the mockery going on what's about to happen? What exactly is this mockery going on? What is it? So I want to share with you an interesting interpretation. An interpretation is as follows. To appreciate this, let's read out a little bit more. Moshe and Aaron come to Paroi, Vayimru Eilav, and they said to him, Kor Yamar Hashem Elokeiho Ivrim, so says Hashem, the God of the Ivrim, Ad Masai Me'an Telonais Mipanai Shlach Mi V'Yavnuni, until how long shall you refuse to humble yourself before me? Send out my nation so that they shall serve me. Ki Imayina Tonga Shleach Hasami, for if you refuse to send out my nation, Hinani Mevi Machar Arbe B'Gvulecha, behold, I shall tomorrow bring locust in your midst. The chisas ein haaretz, they shall cover up the appearance of the land. L'yuchal eretz haaretz, land will not be able to be seen. V'achal es yeser ha'pleita nish'eres lachem en abarad, and it shall devour that which escaped, that which has remained for you from the hail. V'achal es kol eitz tamech lachem en asadeh, and it shall devour all the trees that grow for you in the field. Now, preceding the plague of locust was the plague of barad, of hail. And as the Torah describes, certain vegetation, certain crops were destroyed by the hail, and certain things survived. Basically, if it was hard, it was destroyed by the hail. If it was more pliable, if it was soft, it was not destroyed by the hail. So now when the arba come, when the locusts come, that which was not destroyed by the hail will now be destroyed by them. And that's the warning they're given. Now Let's turn to the next page, on page 342. And let's look at Pasuk Tes Zayin, verse 16, towards the bottom of the page. So, the Torah describes how the plague of locusts arrived. Vayimeher paroi, likroi l'moshe, let's go back one Pasuk. It covered the sight of the earth, it darkened the land, and it devoured all the grass of the land, and all the fruits of the tree, that the hail had left over. Nothing was left of vegetation in tree, or in the grass of the field, in all the land of Egypt. So everything's gone. Vayimeher paroi, paroi hurried, l'kore l'moshe l'aroi, to call to Moshe l'aroi, vayimeher he said, chatasi l'Hashem elokeichem elokem, I have sinned to Hashem, your God, and to you, v'atasana chatasi achapam, forgive me just this time, v'atir l'Hashem elokeichem, daven to Hashem, your God, v'yoser me'alai rakas hamavis hazeh, and he shall remove from me just this form of death. Moshe did so. The locust went away, Paro's heart was hardened, and so on. Now, what was Paro hurrying so much for and asking Moshe for the locust to stop? If the Torah describes that everything's gone, so what's the difference? What were the locusts doing anymore? What's there to be concerned about? You know, locusts typically, you know, either the wind carries them away, or if they're done eating, they move on. What exactly was Paro asking for when he asked Moshe to daven for the locust to be removed? Says the Sefornu. The Sefornu writes, "Vayimeher Paro," and the words Paro hurried. B'terem yechal ha'arba es sherosh ha'achita v'akusemis v'shara asavim. He heard to Moshe before the locust could eat the roots of the wheat and the spelt and other grasses. He was afraid that now what's happening is, look, we know that the locusts eat what's on the surface. Pi was afraid the locusts are going to start digging into the ground and uprooting things. That's what he was afraid of. Therefore, he hurried to Moshe to go ahead and tell Moshe, he hurried to Moshe to daven for the locusts to stop. That's what the Sefornu says. So what we see from here, and from this whole, and from what happened through the plague of Arba, is that the plague of Arba was different than the other plagues. When you're dealing with the other plagues, for instance, there was blood, right? During blood, there's no water. Blood goes away, water's back. There's frogs. Once the frogs go away, no more frogs. By all the other plagues, until now, and almost even to the future, until you get to Makas Becheris, you're dealing with plagues that come and go. They come and go. And in essence, it can even appear like Paro says, okay, we went through the storm, and after the storm is over, we're okay again. We're back to normal. Yeah, we gotten beaten up, we lost some people, we did this, but we're back, you know, things are back things are back to the way they were before. By Arba, that wasn't true. Because even though Arba was gone, all the vegetation was gone. So the results of the plague of Arba remained. And that's what it means when Hashem says to Moshe, you'll tell your children I made a mockery of Egypt. The mockery of Egypt is that you have Paro considering himself a god, Paro considering himself so powerful, and at the end of the day, you know, and if he gets whacked, but then he gets away with it, you know, it doesn't necessarily belittle him. But here, by Arba already, Paro is made a mockery of. Here he is, all superpower, a god, he considers him a god, and even though the Arba has gone away, at the end of the day, he's left without any vegetation. So the point is that Arba, the results of Arba lingered. Arba lingered even after the Arba went away. And that's called his halalti. That's called making a mockery of. Since the results left, that made a mockery of the so-called power, godly power, that Paro claimed. Okay, let's go back to page 340. And let's now look at Pasuk Zion. That's four lines from the bottom of the page, on page 340. Perek Yud, Pasuk Zion, chapter 10, verse 7. Vayemru avdei Paro Elov. So after Moshe and Aaron deliver the warning about Arba, about the locust, Vayemru avdei Paro Elov. The servants of Paro said to him, Admasa yezalonu lemaikesh. For how long will this one be an obstacle for us, a stumbling block for us? Shalachasu anashim, send out the people, v'yavnus Hashem elokeihem, and let them worship their God. Haterem teida, do you not yet know, ki avdei Mitzrayim, that Mitzrayim has been lost? So Moshe and Aaron returned to Paro. And Paro said to them, go serve Hashem your God. Who and who are going? So Moshe said, with our youth and with our elderly we shall go. But with our children and our sons, with our daughters, with our sheep, with our cattle, we will go. For it is a festival of God for us. So Moshe's reply is, everyone has to go. And Paro says to them, so shall Hashem be with you, as I will send you and your children. Ru kiran neged peneichem, see that evil is opposite you. Lo yichei, not so. Luchunu agavarem, the men should go, v'yivdu es Hashem, and serve God, ki oisetem avakshim, that's what you're asking for. V'yigarash oso beis b'nei paroi, and he chased them out from in front of the face of Paro. Moshe says, everyone's going to go, and Paro says, no, only the men. And that's the end of the conversation. So the Kliyakar has a number of questions on these psukim. So Paro says, first question he asks is, it says, mi va mi ha'olchim, Yesh binyan zeh sveikis, sveikis. Hein keif ami vami kidai be'echad. Question number one. He says there are many questions to be asked here. Why does Parav have to say mi vami hochim? Who and who are hochim? He should just say mi hochim. Who's going? Why does he have to say the word who twice? V'oid, another question has the Kli Yakar. Ha-hoyochim lashon hoive, inim is yashiv. The form of the word hoyochim is present tense, going. Ha-yoloi leimer mi-yelech, mashpala haba. He should have said, mi-yelchu, who's going to go? That's the future tense. Ka-hoyochim mashpala sh-hoyochim achshav. Hoyochim, who are going, the word going sounds they're going now. No one went now, they're going to go. So the question should be phrased as, who and who will go? Why is he using the present tense form of going? Okay, another question. He asks, why is it enough to say Nelech twice? When Moshe responds, he says, our elder, our young and our old, we will go. Our daughters, our sons and our daughters, we will go. Why does it have to say, we will go twice? That's question number three. Question number four is that Moshe says, why are we all going? Ki Chag Hashem Lanu, for it is a festival of God for us. So his question, the Kli Yakar asks an interesting question. Moshe Rabbeinu already, when he requested or when he demanded, the Jewish people should be able to go out to serve Hashem. V'oil ki Chag Hashem Lanu, harei l'maylam b'shem Hashem v'yachogilu b'midbar. Before Moshe says in the name of Hashem that he wants, Hashem has said, let my children go out for 3 days so that they shall celebrate with me in the desert. Hashem, it's a message delivered in the name of Hashem that they should come out and celebrate with me in the desert. Mashma sheyachag laHashem. That implies a festival to God, v'loy lanu, but not to us. What is that word us? What's the connotation of the word us? And he says the difference between if you call something a Chag LaHashem, a festival for Hashem, or a Chag Lanu, a festival for us, is the following. If you call something a Chag LaHashem, then that means the entire festival is focused on service of God. If you say Lanu for us, then that means part of the festival is our enjoyment. That's part of it. And we find that he says when it comes to Shavuos. The Gemara talks about the fact that the Torah says by a Shavuos Atzeres LaHashem, it'll be a holiday for Hashem. That's one pasuk. Uksiv. Then we have another verse that talks about Shavuos and says Atzeres Tiyeh Lochem. It shall be a festival for you. So the Gemara says, what is it? Is it a festival to God? Is it a festival for you? Says the Gemara that when it comes to Shavuos, we have 50-50. We have half and half. Half is to God. Half is to you. That means you spend half your time in service to Hashem, but you also have to find time for yourself. That means for your personal enjoyment, for eating, for drinking. That is what we have by Shavuos. Again, by Shavuos, Shavuos was described as a holiday to Hashem, also a holiday for you. So the Gemara says it means part of the holiday is for Hashem. It's focused on service to Hashem. Part of the festival is focused on your personal enjoyment. So if so, here where it says Chag Hashem Lanu, the Kli Yakar asks that that's two things coming together that shouldn't be. Chag Hashem Lanu means a festival for Hashem and for us. And originally, it wasn't portrayed that way. Originally, it was portrayed as Hashem says, come and celebrate to me. That there is no implication of any kind of physical celebration from the part of the Jewish people. Now, good, you want to say that the same way the Gemara says it's half and half, and here also it's half and half? He's not ready to say that so quickly by over here. To say that the same idea of saying a festival for Hashem and for us means half and half. Maybe because it says a chag for Hashem for us. Not like by Shavuos, it says festival for us, festival for Hashem. It says festival separately. Here it says it together. What is the meaning of these two connotations of it's a chag for Hashem, it's a festival for Hashem, which would imply focusing on Hashem, but he also calls it lanu for us. How do the two things come together? So therefore, the Kli Yakar says like this. He changes the explanation of what was Paris' question. Those words, mi v'mi aholchem, who and who are going. it doesn't mean what we think it means. He parley sha'al es Moshe mi sheyelech. Pari was not asking Moshe, who's going. Elagozar oimer shavadai lo yelchu ki mazcharim shadarkam lizbayach. Pari always meant that the only ones who can go are the males, who are the ones who are, it was their practice to offer sacrifices. It wasn't the practice of women, it wasn't the practice of children, it was the practice of the adult males. V'amar lachu ivdu es Hashem elokeichem. He says, go and serve your God. Go search throughout all ends of the world. And go see, what do people do? Who and who are the ones that go? That's why the double wording, who and who. If you go to the right, if you go to the left. To see everywhere. Who are the ones that go out to offer? What he means is like this. Paro was never saying to Moshe, when he said the words, mi v'mi aholchem, he was not asking a question. He wasn't inquiring and looking for an answer from Moshe. He was actually trying, this was his first way of saying, only the men are going. Why? And so what did he mean when he said, who and who are going? He meant the following. Mi v'mi aholchem means, go look around the world. Who and who go? Again, the word holchim. Who and who are going? When people around the world, that's the v'mi yami, who and who, look at this side of the world, look at that side of the world, look all over. When people go to sacrifice, who are the ones going? Not who are the ones you want to go now, Moshe, but in general. When you look and observe, who are the people that bring sacrifices? Who are they? That's the mi v'mi holchim. It's not a question to Moshe. It's a question of, look, you want to go serve Hashem? Go look and see who are the ones that go. That's mi v'mi aholchem. Who are the ones that go? V'heishiv Moshe. Moshe responded, "B'noreinu v'zkeinenu neilech." Moshe's response is, our old and our young are going to go. And then he adds more. So the Kliyakar explains, the Nelech, really, the double Nelech means to separate from the Holchim of Paro. As we said, Mi v'mi aholchem, who and who are going, when Paro says the going, he's not talking about the Jewish people who want to go now to the desert. It means, as the Kliyakar says, people in general who sacrifice. When Moshe talks about going, Moshe's not talking about the general people who go to sacrifice, because Moshe knows. In general, when you're going to sacrifice, who goes to sacrifice generally around the world? Men. The adult men go. So therefore, the first thing Moshe says is, "B'noreinu v'zakeinenu nelech." When it comes to our going, it's going to be our elders, and it's going to be our young, it's going to be our youth, it's going to be our young, it's going to be our old. Yes, it's going to be the men. But in addition to that, there's going to be more. What's going to happen is, right. Rather, what Moshe is trying to say is, number one, that we, and maybe that everybody else in the world, they do their thing, but by us, we're going to have our youth and our elders going, forgetting about what everybody else does. They do what they do. What we're going to do is the following. We are going to go our elders. Our going is going to be, number one, the adults. But besides that, there's going to be another going. And that's why we have the second word, Nelech. And that other going is referring to the fact that you have the women and children also going. And why do we have them going? They are going because of the fact that it's a Chag Hashem Lanu. And the reason why they're going is because it is a festival for Hashem. It is a festival for Hashem. One second. Mikomakim anachnu neilach mikol v'chol. Where everybody by us is going. V'nasan tam l'dover. And Moshe Rabbeinu exclaimed, why? Ki chag Hashem lanu, because it is a festival to God for us. Ki bishleim akol ha'ochim shen v'ochim kiim l'zbayach. You're right. When it comes to everybody else who just goes for sacrificing, you're right. Then the only ones who go are the ones who typically go out to do sacrifices, which are the men. But for us, besides for the aspect of a festival to God, which that's why we have our young and our old men that we are going, You also yesh oleinu mitzvah acheres oid. We have another mitzvah, v'simchas achag, and that's the rejoicing of the festival. Like any yontif, right? A yontif, you're supposed to serve, it's a time for serving Hashem, but we also have the celebrating, the physical enjoyable, in the physical enjoyment celebration of yontif. That's what we always have. And that is what Moshe was trying to explain to Paro. We don't just have the sacrificing, we also have the simchas yontif. We also have the joy of yontif. Zehu sha'amar ki chag Hashem lanu. We have both aspects. We have a chag for Hashem, and it's lanu. We have a chag for Hashem, we're going to bring sacrifices. And you're right, from that point of sacrificing, it should be the men. But since it's lanu, since it's meant to be a festival for Hashem and lanu for us, we're supposed to be enjoying the festival. Tzarach liya iskam lanu. Therefore, the yadua shein simchas ha'adam shalema ki mizman sheishtu abana v'chol kinyan avimai. At the end of the day, you want to enjoy yontif. How do you enjoy yontif? With your wife, with your family, even with your possessions. Because at the end of the day, you want the men to go out and offer sacrifices, and they'll enjoy themselves out there. They're not going to enjoy themselves with their families and possessions basically held hostage in Egypt. And therefore, Moshe says, everyone has to go. And that's why he said, this is why he said, twice the word nelech, we will go. In order to show that there are two divisions, there are two groups, or two purposes in going. When it comes to the service part, for the worship part, the sacrificing part, that's our youth, that's our elders. All the adult men. But the other part, when we talk about our children, they will go, that's all about the rejoicing. Because part of what we're doing when we are bringing the sacrifices to Hashem is not only are we just sacrificing and worshiping, it's a chag lanu, it's a festival for us. It's a festival for us to rejoice and to rejoice with Hashem. And therefore, that can't go just alone. It can't be just the men are going. For that, we need our families and everything else to come along. And therefore, that's what we need. So the way that the Kli Yakar explains what's going on is that Paro's question, who is going, is not a question to Moshe. Okay, Moshe, let me know. Who are you taking out? Who are you taking out from Egypt to go ahead and bring the sacrifices? That's not what Paro is saying. Paro is already preempting. Paro is already saying, you want to go ahead and serve Hashem? Fine. But you want to know who's going? Take a look around at all people who worship. Look from one end of the world to the other end of the world. When people go out to worship, who goes out to worship? That's who you go up to worship now. Viva Me'ochim. Who goes? When people sacrifice, who goes? Those who can go, those are the ones that can go now. Moshe Rabbeinu responds, you're right. If all we were doing was try to bring sacrifices, that's all we're meant to do, then you're right. Just the men. The adult, the young men, the older men, the men would go out. But it's more than that. It's not just Chag LaHashem. It's not just a festival to Hashem. It's a festival to Hashem for us. When we celebrate, when we have a festival to Hashem, we do the worship, the sacrifices. Excuse me. But we also celebrate. And if we're going to celebrate, then we have to celebrate with our families. And therefore, when it says Nelech, Nelech, when it says our elders and our young, we will go. Our sons and our daughters, we will go. Moshe is trying to say, we have two purposes. We have one purpose, which is the sacrifices, which, yes, that will be done by the men. And then there is the other group that's going for the purpose of the celebration of Yontif, and that is, we will go with our sons and our daughters. So that is how the Kli Yakar explains the words and the discussion between Moshe and between Paro. Paro is trying right away, is saying it's only adult men, and Moshe responds that for a yontif you have to have everyone. Okay, so I want to share with you a story it's tangential, it's nothing to do with the parsha, but it's just something, an interesting story that I saw that relates a little bit to this idea about how the simcha of yontif is when you're together with your family. So we know that when if two people have some kind of a monetary dispute, they go before a beis din, they go before a biblical court for a din Torah, for a Torah judgment. And there is a Mishnah Pirkei Avos that says, "Ukshiyu bali dinim oimdim lefanecha," when the plaintiffs stand before you, "Yubeinecha kereshoyim," "Tishmi," your eyes like wicked people. What does that mean? Look at them both as wicked. So the Ratnur explains, Shalayate leibcha le'echad mehem loimar, that you shouldn't favor one saying, ish ploini chashavu, that person, he's a very prominent person. He's a person of high stature. Litan tain sheker, he would never lie. Shemato emrekein, if that's going to be your attitude, einat haraya loichayva, you'll never see anything wrong for him. You'll never see that maybe he's wrong. At the end of the day, you can have a very prominent and righteous person that claims that he's right, and maybe he's not. It happens. People make mistakes when it comes to monetary, dealings. So therefore, whoever walks in, both of them, they're rishayim, they're wicked. You should suspect both of them of lying and cheating. You have to make sure, no matter who walks into that based in, you have to look at them as both rishayim. They're both wicked. They're both wrong. And you need to figure out what you need to investigate and interrogate and ask questions as if these people are the biggest rishayim, the biggest thieves in the world. You have to look at each one of them like that. Okay? Because if you don't, if you look at one and say, how is it possible, such an important person, such a righteous person, and what if the other guy's a schmo, or the other guy's a ganav himself, you know, in the past he hasn't been too honest, you're going to go ahead and make assumptions. The Mishnah says you can't make assumptions. Each person has his day in court, so to speak, and each person has to be given their fair chance, and no matter who is coming in for the judgment, every person is suspect of at least making a mistake. Okay, so the story told of a certain Rav, and he had the following situation. Two people from his town came to him for a judgment. Now, you can go to a court of three judges for a judgment, and very often you'll have two people will go to the local Rav, the local rabbi, and they'll accept his decision on the matter, without a full based in, and it carries the same weight in the sense that, you know, the proper thing that if you accept this one rabbi's decision, that's what you have to listen to. So this Rav had a situation where two people from the community or people from the area came before him for a judgment. One of them was the Reish HaKahal. He was the head of the community, very prominent person. The other guy was the only not religious person in town, the one and only person who was not a Shomer Shabbos in town. And they had some kind of monetary dispute. And they came before the Rav. Even though this person wasn't religious, he agreed to go in front of the Rav, as two Jews should. When it comes to a judge, they shouldn't go to a secular court. They should go to a rabbinical court, to a Jewish court. And that's what they did. And the Rav sided with the not from Jew.
We hear the case.
What?
We have to hear the whole story.
But that's the case. He sided with the not from Jew. Well, the Reish HaKahal was not very happy. Like, how can you do that? How can you side with him? And he actually refused to listen to the decision of the Rav. Refused to accept it. So the other plaintiff said to the Rav, so what do I do now? He says, well, now you have permission to go to a secular court. Take him to a secular court. Take him to the court and to a higher court, wherever it may be. And take him to a secular, take him to a secular court. And he did. He took him to a secular court. And guess who the secular court sided with? The Reish HaKahal. The secular court sided with the head of the community, not like the Rav's decision. So the other plaintiff comes back to the Rav and says, now what do I do? He says, now you go to St. Petersburg, you go to the high court, and I am ready to come and testify on your behalf. Okay? So the non-religious plaintiff went to St. Petersburg, got himself a court date, and a summons for the Rav, and the Rav was summoned to court on Shavuos, which means he'd have to go spend Yontif, or actually the court case, I shouldn't say he was summoned. Let's say the court case was on Shavuos, which means that the Rav would have to leave his family and his community for the Yontif of Shavuos, which for this Rav was a very special Yontif, and he'd have to leave everything and spend Yontif in St. Petersburg so that on Yontif he can go testify for this person. And he did it. And he decided he's going. He's going to spend Yontif in St. Petersburg. And people asked him and said, why? Why are you leaving Yontif? You're leaving your family on Yontif? why are you doing this? And his answer was, I have to do this. It's the right thing to do. Justice has to be kept. If the decision based on halacha was that this person is correct, I have an obligation to make sure that should be fulfilled. And if it means I have to give up yontif at home with my family, with my community, in order to make sure that the judge that justice is carried out, that's what I have to do. So, like I say, it's tangential because we mentioned the idea of celebrating yontif with your family. But it's a story that shows how important it is that for judgment to be carried out properly, how far a person has to go to make sure that what's right is carried out. Okay, let's move on. So, what happens is, Arba comes, Choshech comes, and then finally the warning for Makas Bechiris. And before Makas Bechiris takes place, Hashem gives the mitzvah of Korban Pesach. And we're going to take a look now on page 352. This is Perek Yud Beis, Pasuk Yud Aleph, chapter 12, verse 11, where Hashem is telling Moshe the laws of the Korban Pesach, of the Paschal sacrifice. And Pasuk Yud Aleph reads, V'chacha toichlu oisai, this is how you shall eat it. Masaichem chagurim, you shall have your loins girded, na'alechem aragleichem, your shoes on your feet, u'makelchem b'yetchem, your staff in your hand, v'achaltem aizeh b'chipazin, you shall eat it in haste, Pesach hu l'Hashem, it is a Pesach offering to Hashem. So the specific instructions of how to dress for eating the Korban Pesach. You dress for eating the Korban Pesach like you're ready to go out on a trip. Loins girded, you know, you got your belt tied on, you got your shoes on your feet, you got your walking shoes, you got your walking staff. That is how you eat the Korban Pesach. And eat it quickly. You eat it like you eat it ready to leave. The obvious question is, why did they have to eat the Korban Pesach like they were ready to leave? There was no, on the part of the Jewish people, on the part of Hashem, they weren't leaving until the next day. The Egyptians wanted them out at night, but they weren't going to leave at night. So why was it necessary to have them dressed, eating the Korban Pesach, like they're ready to go when they didn't need to be ready to go yet? Says the Sefornu. The explanation is, the point of this, you know, this mode of dress is mizumanim laderech. It means ready for the trip. Lohayres, for the purpose of showing, I'll be talking bilti mesifah pekel yisbarach, to show their trust, their undoubted trust in Hashem, b'yoseh machinam atzmam laderech, by preparing themselves for the trip, b'oidim beis hakela, while they're still in jail. The purpose of eating the Korban Pesach in such a manner of we're all ready to go is to show that although the Jewish people are not yet free, they're still in jail, they're still in Egypt, but they show that they have no question that they will be getting out. And because they have no doubt they're getting out, and they're so ready and excited and sure they're getting out, they're so excited that they're already ready to go early. You know, when you want to go on a trip early, right? So you're ready early because you're excited to go. Well, the Jewish people are showing that they're excited to go. They have no question. They're getting out of here. And therefore, they're already ready and dressed to go, even though they're not going until a good couple of hours later. So that is the purpose of eating the Korban Pesach in this mode of dress. Well, it's to show that they are confident and they are sure that Hashem will take them out, even though they're not out yet. They're still in Egypt. They're still officially slaves to a very, very powerful king and country. But for them to actually now be ready, set to go at this point of time shows they have no question in their mind that Hashem will take them out, implying that it would have been possible for them to still, after all said and done, they could still have some kind of doubt for they'll get out of this place because it was such a difficult place to get out of. And by dressing in this manner, that shows that no matter what, they have no question they're getting out and they're all ready to go. That's the explanation behind this mode of dress. So just an addition, a thought about this. You know, if they would have done this on their own, right? If they would have done this on their own, they would have gotten all dressed to go, all ready to go a couple of hours later, because they're all excited and they know they're getting out, so they're ready to go now. If they would have done that on their own, then they would be showing that they have no doubt. But if Hashem says you have to do that, are they really showing that they have no doubt? Hashem is telling them to do it. They're not doing it on their own. How does that show on their part that they're ready to go? So it would seem to me the explanation to that is that what the Sefernu means is not necessarily that this is that, you know, what they did was their showing, but rather they're showing on their part, they have no question. It's really Hashem telling them, if you want to leave Mitzrayim, besides the fact that to be ready to bring the Korban Pesach and to put the blood on the doorpost, you need to show how much you have no doubt that you will get out of here. And our actions, we know, are what influences us. Action is what influences us as people. Our actions make us who we are. Our actions internalize messages stronger than our thoughts. And therefore, Hashem says to the Jewish people, you need to show that you have no doubt that you're leaving. And how are you going to do that? How are you going to come to that point of no doubt? You're going to act that way. And by acting that way, that will help you get to that point that you will be without question. By acting this way, that those actions that show trust, will actually instill the trust in you. And you will come to the point that you'll have no doubt. This is another part of how Hashem was giving the Jewish... The Sefer HaChinuch talks so much about how the aspects of the Korban Pesach, of all those laws are meant to actually be actions of nobility. And being that our actions are what truly influence us and truly internalize all the messages that we learn, Hashem gives us many mitzvahs, Zeich Letzeas Mitzrayim, many mitzvahs to remember the exodus of Egypt, because the more we do to remember Mitzrayim, the more the lessons of Mitzrayim are inculcated in us. Because it's the actions that influence us, not more even more than our thoughts. According to Sefernu, the way I understand it, this was a temporary aspect. We don't do this every year. But for the Jewish people, another aspect of the actions that Hashem tells them to do, so that their actions influence them as people, was that they should act in a way that shows that they have no doubt that they're leaving and that they're all ready to go, and therefore they're all dressed and ready to go. Okay, let's now move on a little further. And let's talk about matzah. Take a look on page 358. This is Perek Yud Beis, chapter 12, Pasuk Lamed Tes, Pasuk 39, verse 39. Okay. Vayayifu es habatzeik, and they baked the dough, asher tzimim Mitzrayim, that they took out from Egypt. Ugois, matzais, matzah cakes, that's a bad word, right? How they translate it? Yeah, cakes. Okay. Matzah cakes. Kilei chametz, because they had not risen, they had not leavened. Kigarshim and Mitzrayim, for they were chased from Egypt. Layachlus mameya, they were not able to delay. The gamseid loyaser lohem, and also they did not make provisions for themselves. So when we read this pasuk, I think I've always read this pasuk the way we read it by the Pesach Seder. V'yafra sabaitzeik, they baked the dough as matzah, kilei chametz, because it didn't rise. And why didn't it rise? Because they were chased out before they had a chance to rise. So the reason why they ate matzah was because they just weren't given enough chance for the bread to rise and to become chametz. So they baked matzah cakes, kilei chametz, because they had not leavened, they had not become chametz. And why was that? Because they were chased out of Egypt, there was no waiting, they couldn't wait anymore, and therefore their bread only baked into matzah and not into chametz. Now, there are other commentaries that explain this pasuk differently. Let me share with you how the Ksav HaKabbalah explains the pasuk. Vayayifu es habatzeik, they baked the dough. Afu oisei matzis, they baked it as matzis. Why? Mipnei hamitzvah shenitztavu. Because they were given a mitzvah. Sa'ar v'yimatzei b'vateichem, chalacha meitz v'nichrasa. They were told, no leaven, no sourdough should be found in your homes. Anybody who eats chametz will be cut off. That is what Hashem told them. When Hashem told them the laws of the Parban Pesach, Hashem told them, they have to not eat chametz. Okay? So therefore, on the day that they left, which is the first day of Pesach, do you know why they baked matzahs? Ki lo chametz, because it couldn't be chametz. It wasn't allowed to be chametz. Then it says, and they were chased out of Egypt, they couldn't wait. That's explaining, why didn't they bake it in the city? Meaning, why did they bake it before they left? And to carry baked matzah. And that's why they carried it as dough. Like it says, the kneading bowls were tied in their garments. The Ksav Kabbalah is saying like this. There's two things in the pasuk. The bread was chametz. Why? No, sorry. The bread was matzah. Why? Because it wasn't allowed to be chametz. Because they had a mitzvah that day, that first day of Pesach. By the very first Pesach, when they left Egypt, do you know the first that first day they had a mitzvah of not eating chametz, not eating chametz. Therefore, whatever they were going to bake had to be baked as matzah. The thing is, though, the pasuk says, and they baked the dough that they took out of Egypt. That means they didn't bake it before they left. Why not bake it before they left? Why were they taking out the dough, which is what we see from the previous pasuk? They took out the dough, and they baked it either on the way or when they stopped in Sukkos, which is one with a short stop that they had. But it's clear from the psukim that they baked the dough that they took out. What they took out was the dough. Why did they take out dough? Bake the matzahs in Mitzrayim before you leave and bake matzahs. A lot of you didn't schlepping dough. The answer is they couldn't because they were chased out. They didn't have time to do that. But it's not like we sometimes think that like they started, but they had to interrupt it. Or they started, they wanted to bake more, but they couldn't because they got rushed out. They baked, according to this explanation, and many other commentaries say, the explanation is, do you know why they were matzahs? Because they had to be matzahs. Because they weren't allowed to eat chametz on that day of Pesach. They weren't allowed to. Now, okay, fine. Now I know why they're matzah. But why were they schlepping out dough? Why did they have to bake the dough that they took out of Egypt? Why are you baking the dough now? Bake it matzahs and take matzahs out. Now that the answer is because Garshu, they were chased out. They didn't have the chance to do it. And therefore, it had to be that they schlepped the dough out and baked the matzahs later, but it had to be matzahs because that's the mitzvah. Okay, that is how the Ksav HaKabbalah and other commentaries explain what's going on here. And this is really based on a question in the Gemara about the first Pesach, meaning when the Jewish people left and they were given clearly a mitzvah not to eat chametz, was it only for the first day of Pesach or for all 7 days of Pesach? We have all 7 days. What did they have? Only 1 day or 7 days. So if you learn they only had 1 day, if it's only 1 day, on that the pasuk is saying it's matzah because it's not allowed to be chametz. At the end of the day, why didn't they bake the matzahs in Mitzrayim? Said the answer is because they were chased out. Well, now, they had dough. They could have baked it there, and they didn't have to put sourdough in it. They could have baked it as matzah there. But the point is, they weren't able to because they were rushed out. But not that it didn't. Not that they couldn't make matzah because they were rushed out. They had to make matzah because they had to make matzah. But the reason why the matzah had to be baked, the reason why they didn't take out baked matzahs is because they were rushed out. Now there are others who learn it differently. When we talk about matzah by the Seder and we say matzah shen oichem al shuma, why do we eat the matzah? Let me just read you what do we say in the Seder. We say matzah shen oichem. This matzah that we eat al shuma. Why do we do it? Al shuma shalei hismik, but say kam shalav. I say no la hachmitz. Because the dough did not have a chance two become chametz. Ad shenigla aleihem melech malchei hamlachim hakadosh baruch hu galam, until Hashem revealed Himself upon them and redeemed them. And it quotes this pasuk. So the wording of the Haggadah is why base is that the dough didn't have a chance to rise by the time Hashem redeemed them. Didn't have a chance to rise by the time Hashem redeemed them. That sounds like, right, it was in the process, but they had to stop it because Hashem said out. That's what the Haggadah sounds like. And it's interesting that the Malbim explains this and explains this whole section of the Haggadah in the following way. Again, at this point in the Seder, we're explaining the mitzvah of matzah. What does the mitzvah of matzah represent? What is it teaching us? So it's there to remind us about the fact that the bread, they don't have enough time to rise by the time HaKadosh Baruch Hu took us out. And what is so important about that? What is so important to remember the fact that Hashem rushed us out of Mitzrayim before the dough had a chance to rise? What's so important about that? Says the Malbim, because the fact that we were rushed out, the whole idea of being rushed out tells us what is the nature of the Exodus from Egypt. When we talk about we were redeemed from Egypt, what is the focus on? What is that redemption we're talking about? Because we know there are two facets to redemption. Two facets for being freed from slavery. One was the physical aspect, I'm not enslaved anymore. Secondly, we know that it was a spiritual slavery and a spiritual redemption. There was a spiritual slavery that we have, that our sages teach us, a concept that Jewish people fell to the 49th level of tumah, of spiritual impurity. If they would have waited a second longer, they would have hit number 50 and they would have been lost forever. They would have come to such a point of a corruption of their spirituality, their neshamas, that they would have just completely assimilated amongst the Egyptians and would have been gone. And that would happen even after the Korban Pesach was brought. They had to get out of there. As long as they stayed in there, Mitzrayim had this effect on their neshama, and if they would have stayed a second longer, they would have been lost. That only makes sense, says the Malbim, if we're dealing with a spiritual redemption. From a physical redemption, you can stay another 5 minutes, you can stay another half hour, it's not going to make a difference. You don't got to rush out to the point that you can't let your bread break. You can't let your bread bake. You don't have to rush out for that. You know, they're telling you to leave. They're real happy. They want you to leave. They want you to leave last night. But you said, no, we're leaving tomorrow morning. So wait a couple of more minutes and let the bread rise. The answer is, it would only be a physical redemption. You're right. But that's not what it was. The main redemption of Mitzrayim, what we celebrate Pesach about, what we remember Yitzhak Mitzrayim about, is the fact that we became Hashem's people, those who would receive His Torah and be a holy nation and a kingdom of Kohanim, that we should be the people that Hashem's Shechina should rest upon. That is what Yitzhak Mitzrayim was about. And you know what proves that point? You know what brings out that point the most? The fact that we were rushed out of Egypt. The matzah that we eat, that reminds us that we were rushed out of Egypt, that is what shows us the nature, the essence of Yitzhak Mitzrayim. And that's why he says that is the central point of the central point of the night of Pesach. The central point of the night of Pesach is matzah, because matzah shows us what was the whole purpose of this. What are we celebrating? We are celebrating the redemption of our neshamas, of our souls, to become Hashem's special people. And that is manifest in the fact that we rushed out, because that's the only reason why we have to be rushed out. The only reason we had to be rushed out was because if we wanted to become the nation of Hashem, and if we didn't want to fall into spiritual oblivion in Egypt, we had to be rushed out. And that is that's the point of the mitzvah of matzah. But again, it would seem that according to, again, reading the words of the Haggadah, the Haggadah sounds like the reason why, you know, the reason why the bread didn't become chametz was because of the fact that we were rushed out. According to the explanation that we just said before, it's not chametz, it's not supposed to be chametz. From the way the Haggadah sounds like, it wasn't chametz because we were rushed out. Would we not have been rushed out, it would have baked regularly, but because we were rushed out, that's why it didn't become chametz.